You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
And now, two guys who go together like bacon and eggs. Your host, Lou Costanzo, and Dr. James, don't call him Jim, Roberts.
I forgot to turn it on.
Now you're ready.
Now I'm ready, so now you can go for it. Engage, number one. Or you're number two. Just go. Exactly, just go.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Man of the People, which I am. And I'm Chris from South Carolina.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Chris from South Carolina. So, you said an email that your neck of the woods did not get hit by the hurricane. You had to have gotten some rain or something, right?
Lots of rain, man. We got 4 inches, I think, or something like that. It was a lot. Yeah. At least that was in our little backyard deal.
Right.
Yeah.
And your school took in a lot of people that were displaced?
So our school is not a designated area. However, a couple of high schools in our district are. And so if one school's out to support those people, all the schools are out. So we ran, for the kids who would be missing school, especially in our school, it's Title I school. So a lot of kids, you know, come from poor families. Yeah. So we ran these programs where we would feed the kids still for a couple of those days that we were out. So, yeah. Didn't have to go to work, though.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay. Yeah. And James, everything is okay there in London. It's nice and rainy. And
it's not particularly rainy. It's been it's been like miserable as always, and it seems to get dark around 4:30 in the afternoon. But you know, but it is like mid September, so that's what we expect.
Yeah,
just plodding on. 95 days until the new year.
Yeah, tonight I'll be turning the heater on. I think it's supposed to go down in temperature. The house is 70, and usually we keep it around 73-74, so I figure it's probably going to be in the 60s, 69 when I get done with this podcast. So it's going to be pretty cold tonight. So, and when you turn your heat on for the first time, what do you get? Dust burning inside your, you know, your furnace. So that's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting smell for a day or so.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to get into the show tonight.
Absolutely. So when you're ready, go ahead and start with the synopsis.
Well, tonight's show, as an ambassador, mediates peace talks to end a fierce civil war, Deanna Troi begins to act erratically after spending a little time touching on his rocks. This is the third episode of season 6 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is October 5th, 1992, written by Frank Abbatemarco and directed by the man himself, Vinrik Kolbe. Guest stars include Chip Lucia as Vez Alkar, Susan French as Sev Maylor, George D. Wallace as Simmons, Lucy Boryer as Janeway, but not that Janeway, I did look it up, Rick Scarry as Jarth, Stephanie Erb as Leva, J.P. Hubble as the Lucky Ensign, Patty Yasutsuke as Alyssa Ogawa, and Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer.
So, Lou, was there really a voice of the computer, or do you just put Majel Barrett in every episode?
No, it was in there.
It was in there this week. Okay.
Yeah, she did her work.
I'm sure.
She must really spend less time in the makeup chair than a lot of them just to do the voiceovers. But anyway, so...
I don't know. I've seen some pictures of her. She liked that makeup.
Yeah, there was a couple episodes. She was pretty dang cute. She was pretty nice looking. they did her makeup pretty good. But anyway, so what do you think of this episode, first thoughts?
It's a strange episode. I'm going to say that it looks fantastic in HD, and I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to say anything else about how fantastic it looks.
Okay.
That's as swampy as I'm going to get.
Yeah, I think we're going to try to end this on a higher note, so I'm going to go next. seriously, I'm not really sure about this. I think I'm going to be the bummer in this episode, I'm sorry to say, but here's the thing. Season 6, I think, I don't have a lot of intimate memories of Season 6 as I do on other seasons that used to go on car rides with me. This, to me, if I remember correctly, is the season where everybody's family ends up on board.
No, that's not right. That's Season 7. That's still to come. Yeah.
So, Sub Rosa, where's that?
Season 7.
Okay, then.
Yeah. Geordi's mum's 7. Yeah. Troy's sister's 7. Data's grandmother 7. Yeah. All that 7.
All that. Okay, 7 is the number. Okay.
Riker's half brother is 6, though. Okay. And by half brother, I mean transporter malfunction.
Yeah.
So, like, whole self. I heard y'all say half brother when you did the episode. I think I took umbrage with it on Twitter.
Really?
I feel like I did.
Riker, do you say?
Good to know.
Y'all called Tom Riker Riker's half brother. I still listen, even though I don't always get to comment on it.
Well, nobody commented anymore. Not even Kira McDuff. So we stopped.
Kira McDuff.
We stopped doing. I stopped doing the forums.
Last time you said that he didn't comment, he flagged up the fact that he did.
Did he?
So, okay. Yeah. So I think the more accurate statement here is that you don't read the comments.
Yeah. No, I have gone back, and there's a lot of zeros, and it just maybe after the fact they did, but I don't know. I guess I haven't looked at them in a while. But you're right. I do them too much. But so anyway, I just might be the Debbie Downer on this episode. Here's one thing. I don't like to throw too much memory alpha into the show. But here's what it says. It says, Relics was initially intended to be filmed in this episode slot, but was pushed back due to the schedule of guest star James Doohan. Consequently, this episode was written in a rush. End quote. And it shows. Okay, this, I think, is just a terrible dog. But we'll go into that. Doc, tell me why I'm wrong.
Okay, you are wrong. In that we're not going to be ending on a downer. I'm pretty sure this is the worst episode of Star Trek Next Generation. And
what?
I'm pretty.
Yeah, what? Have you seen Code of Honor?
I have seen Code of Honor, and I'll defend Code of Honor to my dying day. Code of Honor, as loyal listeners to the show will remember, was the first episode I got into. In Star Trek, I saw Code of Honor as like a 10-year-old or whatever, and I saw it and I thought, that's the kind of stuff that I want to spend the next 30 years talking about.
You're telling me a little bit about yourself, Doc.
Oh, man. Shades of Grey?
Shades of Grey is good for the first like 25 minutes, and then you can go to sleep. It's fine. This one has no redeeming features, and it even gets worse, because, and I'm going to break the fourth wall here, this isn't our first attempt at recording this. It's not even our second attempt at recording this. This is the third attempt at recording this. Subsequently, I have had to watch this episode 3 times in anticipation of recording. I thought it was dreadful the first time, and it's not aging any better. I was actually going to bat this back out to you two and try to get you to convince me as to why this isn't the worst episode of Trek, but it sounds like I might be sharing this boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's nice to look at. It's a nice episode to look at if it's on mute.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was about to say it's competently put together, and no one is doing anything horrendous. So everyone, you know, Picard's being Picard. I think Picard actually phones it in this episode a bit. I think he's rather, you know, not bad, but certainly kind of lackluster.
Well, okay. Here's an episode that we all three were together on, The Perfect Mate.
Oh, yep.
This is worse. Guess at what we... This is worse than The Perfect Mate?
Okay. Yeah, this is way worse than The Perfect Mate.
Because The Perfect Mate was further in the past. if nothing else.
Whatever's the most present is the worst. So, like, next season it's going to be like, oh, this one's the worst. No, this one's the worst. No, this one's the worst.
No, I'd happily sit down and watch The Perfect Mate, you know, next, you know, now. We can finish the episode. I'll watch The Perfect Mate. It's fine. I have fond memories for The Perfect Mate now with the Ferengi and everyone having a good laugh in 10 Forward and Data was around, wasn't he? And he was trying to be the chaperone. That must have been, you know, the memories are flooding back. This one, on the other hand,
Yeah, I like The Perfect Mate as well. I don't like this. And you're saying I gave Perfect Mate a 1? Because I don't think I did.
Mm-hmm. You'll have to listen to it. Go to the end if you want.
I'm going to go listen to it. And when I say 5, I'm going to come back and...
Now that was who was it that I can't think of his name anymore. We haven't talked to him a very long time, but he said everything was a 5.
Okay. What?
Ben, that's it. Ben, that's it. Why? Yeah. Sometimes I forget names, guy. It happens.
It's a short name. It's not.
I still talk to Ben. We should get him on an episode. I like him.
Hey, you know, he's always welcome. He seems to have disappeared.
Last time I tried that, you know, it fell through too. I got to get her back on too, Melissa. So we got a lot of things. We're going to bring back some nostalgia to this battle bridge soon.
Okay, good.
But speaking of battle, let's talk about the battle with our souls that we have with this episode.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I do have you and Melissa scheduled for Rascals.
Rascals, yes, sir.
Not long.
It ain't going to be long. Okay, so the Enterprise comes to the aid of a transport ship who's under attack by people who really don't want to take on the Enterprise. There are no injuries, but yet they need to transport two people who may be the reason of the attack.
Pause. You can tell how bad this episode's going to go, because did you notice that they did the, we're approaching it, the other ships kind of scuppered away, and it's like, ooh, they didn't want to take on the Enterprise. And I'm thinking, nah, I'm pretty sure they didn't want to put any models onto visual effects. That's the entire reason these guys don't exist. It reminds me, what was the ludicrous episode in season 3 of TOS where they just started throwing out cloaking devices for everyone because they had no money to spend? I think isn't it Let That Be Your Last Battlefield? Which, for no reason at all, the ship that those two come on as a cloaking device, it has no story reason other than it saves a bit of money. And again, I kind of felt that they were trying to pull a fast one on us again this week.
Hmm. Yeah, of course, they do that on occasion. Yeah. But anyway, they have two people aboard that's probably the reason for the attack, and they need to find them to safety. So let's take him. We have Ambassador Vass Alkar in his really old mama.
Oh, I was just laughing.
Yeah, in his really old mama, who believes Deanna is attracted to him. So she issues a threat. Don't pursue him. I won't have it. I'll stop you. Cut to commercial. So, who is this lady? And as we find out later, it's not actually his mama. But I thought she looked so familiar, so I looked her up. And she actually plays the older version. Her name is Susan French. She plays the older version of an actress named Elise McKenna in the movie Somewhere in Time. And I've talked about Somewhere in Time many times with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour, I believe. Yeah. So she plays the older version, and then Jane Seymour plays the younger version, when Christopher Reeve wills him back himself back to 1912 to be with her. So, James, that is one of the movies I put on the flash drive for you. So I hope that eventually, if you still have it, what, 2 years later?
Well, yeah. Not only did I have it, I have had it copied over to my NAS drive. So it's actually part of my media center.
Good.
So it's accessible from the TV. And actually, by the way, I ended up changing my stream box, my streaming box, or the unit that I use for streaming recently. And it's now like infinitely better than it was before. But anyway, that will take me on a digression that is not necessary to get into.
Okay. Well, also Christopher Plummer is, you know, he's on
Star Trek 6.
So yeah. Obviously, you know, that's another reason you'll want to watch that tomorrow when you have got absolutely nothing to do and no kids running around driving you crazy.
Barely have nothing to do.
There you go. It's Somewhere in Time. It's a very sweet little love drama where he goes back in time to meet this woman. Okay, so we're going to transport the ambassador and his bitch-ass mother to Saronia. Which I hear the weather is almost like Ryza. Yeah, I read it somewhere. I wrote it down, and then I read it. So I believe what I read. Saronia's got perfect weather year-round. Along the way, we're going to do some, I don't know, Tai Chi exercises led by Mr. What? Worf? Did any of you find that a little ridiculous that Mr. Worf is in there?
No. So you know, Worf's going to have a strong core. I mean, I think I think it's much more likely that Worf would be doing this than, you know, Deanna or someone.
Fighting Goblop warriors?
Yeah, but actually, one valid point that you have here, which is that we're kind of assuming here that both Klingons and Betazoids and the other aliens that this dude is, they all are connected in the same way as humans are and can bend, and stretching in these directions is a good thing. I mean, maybe that works. I mean, I understand like dog yoga is a thing, so maybe it works for all species. Like a, you know, general bend, a general tightening is all good for you.
They have to have something you do with that third and fourth arm.
Yes.
I mean, there's probably things they could do with it. But anyway. No, I just don't see him doing that. I see him on the holodeck with his monsters.
I can see him doing this occasionally. As a warrior, you have to keep yourself strong. And so sometimes you have to... and centered. And so this is part of his martial arts training as a Klingon. I could totally see it. Problem is, it never comes up again. It's never mentioned. It's never seen. However, these geese, I'm going to maintain, look really nice. Everybody looks comfy. It's nice to watch this scene with the mute on.
With the mute on. So that's important. Mute it.
You got to mute this episode. It's only worthwhile to watch if you mute it.
Okay.
Does it really not come up again?
I'm pretty sure we never see this exercise again. Now, you can absolutely prove me wrong, Doc. I've been wrong many times in my life. Don't mind being wrong again. But I've never seen this before. This is like Space Pilates. It's like a one and done, I feel like.
Hang on, I thought Space Pilates was at least a two and done, wasn't it? I thought it was
Doc, twice. Rewinding and rewatching the same scene doesn't count, man.
Okay.
So as I looked at these people, and I'm looking again, I'm thinking, who is who? Who do we know and who do we not know? And as I said, it looks like Worf is leading. Then he's got six people behind him. One of them would be Deanna. I'm not sure if... I thought that was Crusher, but no. But directly behind him, I think it's Ensign Rager. Now, she's the one that sometimes they put in Wesley's job, but... doesn't she die? I'm trying to remember if she dies in the future.
Who's she? I mean, it's just the black woman. Yes. Like the young black woman. Yeah, she doesn't. She stays until the end. She's...
Okay.
Because she effectively becomes helmswoman, right? In season 7 in particular, I think she's almost always there.
And then we have Alcar, who seems to know all the steps. Just perfect. So I like the fact they can learn stuff in the future very, very fast.
Yeah. By the way, how within the story, how does this bloke get into this situation? I mean, what's happening here? I mean, it seems like there's no reason for this other than for them to have a little bit of a flirt, and this scene then leads into the the encounter with the mad woman again, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
It seems rather convoluted, and I think I used the word convoluted quite a lot.
Convoluted.
But this episode might be taking me to my limits.
Mm. No more convoluted out of you,
Doc. We're in a ship in space, going faster than the speed of light most of the time.
Yeah, but that's fine because that's
meeting all humanoid aliens.
It's in universe continuity or in universe logic. So you combine to a small number of axioms that then allow things to work. I think it's much more objectionable when you have to buy into. So here's the thing: having to buy into a small number of very, very large axioms requiring kind of like a big leap of faith, I think, is less disruptive than having to buy into a large number of smaller ones. So things like the coincidence of people meeting and stuff like that, which is, I think, you have to be of that persuasion. Otherwise, I don't think you can really enjoy sci-fi or fantasy, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So after this stretching exercise, Deanna and Alcar return to his quarter where Mama pops out and decides to level some more threats. But first, she has a very important question to ask. Have you made it with him yet? Oh, I mean, I was expecting her to say, yeah, well, yeah, yes. Sure we have. What about yes. it? Of course. That's the first thing I do. What do you think my job on this ship is? Anyway, but she says, she tells Deanna, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. And I thought, she's senile, but no, actually, she's probably not. She's trying to warn her. Stay away from him. You'll regret it. But not for the reasons we think at first. Do you think she, in her own way, I took it as jealousy.
Yeah, it subverts expectations. That's the whole point of this. But for no. what? Like, what's the purpose?
I think she's actually trying to warn her. She can't really give the reason why she's warning her. Maybe in her state of mind, she's kind of a little frazzled. But maybe she's trying to say, you know, you stay away from him.
I think it's absolute jealousy because whatever the rock does seems to be makes them grow older and maddeningly jealous.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that it's necessarily like her actually trying to ward her or her cattily saying, I'm going to be jealous. And I think that's part of the problem is that somehow this little rock can override the spirit of another human. And there's absolutely like no explanation given as to what it's doing or why. And I don't know that you necessarily have to, like there can be some mystery, but it's just ill-defined and doesn't ever have like a really strong point. It doesn't prove any particular valid moral point or ethical point or scientific point, like, which is what Star Trek is usually really good about. Mm-hmm. This it's just weird. And I think they try to like haphazardly make it about, you know, what it's worth to have someone who's like fully invested in this thing and can fix all these things, and all he needs to save all these lives is this one person's life over here, you know, every so long, apparently every couple days, because that's what it feels like in this episode.
Yeah, right.
But that's so, it's just so strangely done, and it's so haphazard in the way that it's constructed and put together that I just don't get anything cogent from it, which I don't know. Doc, you tell me, how do you feel about that piece?
I kind of completely agree with what you've said. You know, it's odd. You could have had a story here about, you know, if someone does something good whilst being a burden upon others, should that take away from their achievement? And that's kind of like a relatively general question, right? And it doesn't have to be, you know, sitting through and harvesting wives because you're, you know, you're psychologically abusing them or telepathically, you know, drive them crazy. But it can be kind of like a wider question of, you know, a support structure, for example, and someone being able to, you know, being able to pursue their, you know, pursue their own abilities at the expense of other people having to give up theirs. But we don't really have any of that conversation, or it dances around it. It doesn't do much. I don't think that the mad woman is anything other than a mad woman. So I don't think they're even clever enough to, for people to think, oh yeah, she was warning us at the beginning. I actually honestly think she was mad, because if you don't think that she's mad, then she's demonstrably stupid, because she's not making any valid point that you would imagine you could communicate in a very clear way. So you never want to be in a position where you, as an audience member, you think, well, you know, this person, given the if I were in that situation, I wouldn't behave so stupidly as not to get the, you know, message across. And the message seems to be pretty clear, which is, you know, be careful, because, you know, I'm actually not 106, but I'm only 28, and this guy picked me up last Tuesday. I don't know. The thing about we're going to get on to the ceremony thing that they go through, which again, it just seems very much out of place, and it seems to be plucked out of nowhere, and it does unintended things, and it's not clear whether it's the ceremony or whether the ceremony is done at the time where Troy lets her guard down, or what it is. I don't know. And does anyone else also think it's weird about, hey, my mum's dead, do you want to come to a party where we put our fingers together and, you know, yes, you're the only one here, and if you could come here partially clothed, that'd be great. I mean, I'm all in favor of respecting other people's customs, but if someone says that I've had a very bad day and I need you to come into my room and help me stroke my little friend, I kind of stay away from those people.
I mean, if you've had a bad day, that is unequivocally the best thing that could happen to you. But
yeah, I mean, within the marriage, sure.
Right. But he made it seem like, you know, would you come to her funeral? We'll be having it at, say, 1700 my quarters. You know, where's everybody at? Plus, she's also partial empathic. She can't tell that he's got something crooked on his mind.
Well, you know, that's whatever the script writers want for the week, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so, well, their brains are just set up different. I can't read their emotions, you know, whenever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so once again, Troy is completely turned off this episode. As a betazoid, as someone that has had, you know, previous character development, so she's nothing more than an empty vessel for this, for this bloke to kind of, like, you know, use, and it's unfortunate. They even have, I mean, Lou, we've had discussions about Troy being, you know, a perfect person for diplomacy, for, you know, to help out with Picard, and they actually raised that in this episode. They said, hey, have you ever dealt with a bit of diplomacy? And she, instead of it, it's all in all likelihood, Troy is a highly qualified diplomat that has done a lot of this stuff, understands the psychology, and at least would have spent a lot of her time at the academy in this area. And it almost gets brushed off as, nah, not really. She's probably more qualified than the ambassador here. Mm-hmm. But she just gets portrayed as a very, like, almost as an empty, weak woman.
Well, it's even more angering than that. It's more than just an empty, weak woman, but it's like, hey, we don't have an episode. Let's turn her into a sex-crazed maniac and show her nipples. Like, that's really what this episode feels like. That's
okay,
it.
Hang on.
That's all there is to it.
So I've got the Blu-rays of all the TNGs up until season 6. I do not have season 6 onwards. So for the last, like, you know, 4 or 5 episodes, I've been having to watch this on Netflix on my phone. Now, clearly, the resolution I'm getting is not what you're getting, Chris. What, nipples? Really?
Well, no, not visible. But boy, it sure is cold in her quarters.
Okay. I would need to buy myself the Blu-ray.
I don't. That's probably why they can't get the Blu-rays out, because they don't want that much definition. Because I actually wondered, I thought let's see. I'm watching that scene again as Wrecker pulls up. She starts pulling out, coming out. Her underwear is orange. I mean, here.
You've not got a well calibrated TV. If
only you people could see what I'm showing. Do you see a close up version? It looks orange. Now, I don't know if you got good color video on your monitor, but I'm seeing orange. So that's fascinating that I don't know. Obviously, we didn't have such high definition when this was made. So when they get off the Blu-rays on this, they're gonna see that. But yes, you do see that she is very, very nipped, big time. Oh, but that's a different story. Okay, so Deanna goes back to her office, and Riker comes by for those dreaded crew evaluation reports, but we just ain't got time, because it turns out there's a medical emergency in the ambassador's quarters. Mama died. And not only did Mama die, Mama died with her hands up. Did anybody happen to say, why does she look like she's defending herself?
And I do love the idea that, hey, do you mind us doing, you know, a bit of an autopsy? It's like, expressly forbidden. Under no circumstances. In fact, we've got a custom here that we need to dispose of the body within 4 hours. And there's another customer, which means no questions asked.
Yeah.
The guy comes across as being extremely suspicious.
You think? I mean, what's an autopsy? A scan? They don't open them up no more, I don't think. So what's the deal? Well,
I mean, they probably, I think they still do now. But
now? But not then.
I would imagine in the 24th century you would come up with something a little bit less intrusive.
Ah, it's like a big ass Y on your body, you know. I mean, that's what they cut, but still, you know, they need a good detective, because Worf is not one, or inspector, as you guys call him. They need a good inspector there, because Worf just is not one. Not one question. Did you find her this way? Did you have an argument? Why does she look like she's trying to defend herself? Who dies like that?
You know, sure. And so I have to say, there's not much. They don't really, you know. I don't know whether it's because it's just an old woman and they don't really care that it's an old woman, but there's certainly no real worry that this might be a bit suspicious, right? Mm. It's like woman, and then Riker mentions, probably senile. Yeah, sure, probably senile. Ends up dead moments later. It's all good.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that, yeah. Not only is he a suspect, actually, I'd say Deanna's a suspect, too. She did make threats to her. That's motive. Did she have the opportunity? What was the method? The only way you're going to find the method of death is by an autopsy. But, oh, that's right. The guy who may have killed her, that's against her wishes. Don't do it. Thank you. Now let me get out of here before you arrest me.
I mean,
we're talking about Worf. That can't happen. Go on.
They mentioned that, she was very frail. But they should have some type of record of her health through the transporter. Or is this one of the weeks where the transporter doesn't really tell you anything? I mean, surely you must... There must have been some basic test around the transporter. I mean, we know when there's, like, you know, when there's an infection and stuff, the transporter lets you know these things. So...
Well, you know, Crusher did say after an autopsy was ordered that she had the heart, the lungs, the yada 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 of a 20-some-year-old. So do you think the transporter should be able to detect that?
I see no reason why not. And, maybe it wouldn't be flagged up as, you know, as your transporter, as you're beaming over. But certainly, right, once this person's dead, you might want to look at a little bit of evidence or a little bit of information somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, does he reckon that she's 95 and she's lived a long life? And, we kind of know that McCoy got 137 or something like that.
You never know. She might have died a really young girl. But well, it depends on that species.
Yeah. I mean, for a Vulcan, 95 is really young.
Yeah, just a punk. Okay. So, Alcar asked Deanna to perform a funeral ritual with him, and it would be her honor to do so. Which, you know, hey, why not? That's nice. So, like I said, she grabs a hold of one of his stones, and he keeps the other in his hand. And as they're talking, you know, doing a few prayers, he begins to stroke his stone, and closer and closer, and then whammo! He touches stones to her, and next thing you know, she's almost a different person that instant.
Sex crazed maniac.
Yes. Yes.
So this is the moral lesson of the episode right here. This is it. Don't touch stones with random folks. Is this an STD episode? I don't know. You tell me.
Good point. That is true. You don't know who you're jumping in into the stone sack with.
Jumping into the stones. Mm-hmm. Just putting your hands all over
off his stones. Yes. Yep. If he offers the stones to you, say no. I don't know you that well. Unless they look really rocky, then, you know, maybe you could touch them or not. It's up to you.
Does he always travel with these, you know, just in case?
He has to. If he goes through receptacles every 2 days, yeah, of course he would have to.
Yeah, and you got to think about that. Like, how long did Troy have this thing in her? Like, whatever this thing that he has to transfer to her is, how long does she have it? Not very long. Mm-mm. And she's already aging rapidly.
Rapidly. And maybe it's the Betazoid thing that happens. But I'm surprised that nobody has stumbled onto this yet at all. I mean, his people. Haven't they figured that out yet?
Maybe they did, but their thing is to kick him out. Like, send him on his way. And here he is, still doing it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd imagine that if you've got like a never-ending stream of young female interns working with him, and then on the other side, multiple like quote-unquote mothers dying a couple of months later, someone would get suspicious, right?
You would think, but who knows?
But I mean, space is kind of like the Wild West, right? Like it's. Things can happen out in the Wild West like the Mormons, and we'll just never know. Sorry to any Mormon listeners, but read your history, man. It's bonkers what your people did.
Okay. So one question that I do have is that maybe I just didn't get this from the episode, but who is this dude, and why is he so important? Is it me, or is it just like random dude of the week that's going to do something weird?
Yeah, but he moderates peace between two warring species. It's the same thing. It's two nameless species who we don't see him. We don't see the war. That would have been a lot better.
Oh, maybe they send one girl from each tribe every like 2 days, week or so. Mm-hmm. And that's like tribute to pay him to keep the peace between them, and like he's been able to keep the peace for so long. That's a 5-minute thing right there. You could rewrite that in, makes a little sense, ties into your point.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
that's You're a right. lot of people dead though.
It is. It would be.
A lot of young girls.
Okay, so she has a 9 o'clock counseling appointment with Ensign Janeway. Well, in 1992, we didn't think anything of it. Now. I hear that and go, gee, I wonder what that ensign's first name is.
It's not Catherine.
No, it isn't. We do end up seeing Ensign Janeway, but it's not her. Probably her sister, her younger sister. But she cancels all her appointments.
That's canon because it's in Pathways, I believe, the book. And by the way, if you don't read Star Trek novels, you're missing out, man. They're really short, quick reads. They're a lot of fun. Go pick one up occasionally and enjoy your Star Trek in another way besides just viewing it.
Okay.
or listening to two dudes on the internet yabber about it.
Yeah. What do you think? We're done with all the series, say in about 24 years we could do the books. I don't know.
We did the Voyager books in Continuing Missions, and we have completed them up to the current book. So we're pretty proud of our work there. It's really funny. Sarecki, who did the podcast with us, Sarah, she talked about how on the nerd spiral, Star Trek is like, it's pretty low down the nerd spiral. Star Trek books are like the very bottom of the nerd spiral.
Cool.
No, they're not.
What's the bottom of the nerd spiral, Doc?
I don't think Star Trek's that far down either.
Yeah, Star Trek might be in the middle, but like the books of Star Trek.
I mean, do you really think that the is Star Trek in the middle, further down?
Is even lower down in Star Trek Voyager books. It's pretty close to the bottom.
Okay, but I mean, so Star Trek versus like, you know, Lord of the Rings kind of stuff. Which one's further down the drain?
I feel like Lord of the Rings is more. I don't know. They're both kind of widespread.
You know, any. I think any type of tabletop game is going to be further down the spiral than the books, right?
A fair D&D might be like further down the nerd spiral. I don't know. I don't know, man.
Try to pick it. Okay, anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. So Dr. Crusher's having a hard time finding the cause of death of Mama. She wants to do an autopsy, but the Numarian custom forbids it. Again, couldn't she, like, confirm that? You know, computer, what's the Numarian custom on autopsies? Working. Never done. Never, ever, ever done. Don't ever think of doing one.
Done hours after death, as soon as it can. That's probably what it would say.
Yes. Yes, if Numarian is dead, that means someone killed her. Find out why.
Yeah, Numarians only die of murder. That's what we deserve. Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Deanna decides to meditate, and while doing so, begins to fill herself up. That was pretty cool, wasn't it? A little strange, but she likes it. I mean, she was just like,
Lou, this is not a visual podcast, but if it was, everyone would be just a little bit grossed out right now.
Okay. I'll stop doing that then. But she decides to go visit Alcar, which I'd say she was pretty damn flirtatious. I mean, that I've never seen Deanna flirt in general, especially not like that.
Well, I'm all for flirty Deanna. Like,
oh, hell yeah, it was pretty hot, actually.
Well, I'm all for flirty, empowered Deanna, but my problem, and this is what makes it gross, is once again, she's sex-crazed not of her own volition or her own choice, which, again, I promote 100%. She's sex-crazed because she's under the control of some strange rock, and there's no good reason for it. Mm-mm. And you can tell that there's a part of her that is this, because Riker sees it. Mm-hmm.
So by this point, do we think that basically Deanna's just completely not there? She's been taken over.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I kind of also felt that. So I was always in two minds as to whether or not this was the aging, and as a result, the kind of hyper oversexed Betazoid thing, or whether this was more kind of, you know, more kind of control from, you know, from the dude. But is it if either way, right, all of the other main characters, you know, Riker, even Data, they kind of just stand back and go, oh yeah, a bit weird. And they just let this happen. Huh? I mean, if you turned up at work, or if your wife turned up at work, you know, the following day, and was wearing what, you know, Troy ends up wearing, like, you know, only a couple of scenes later, going into 10 forward, out of character, you must think something's up.
Well, Doc, maybe she didn't own it. Maybe she created that from the reference. I didn't even think about that. I assume that she owned this dress, and so they had probably seen it, but maybe only on, like, really, really special, like, occasions when she's on a date with, you know,
whoever. So then the equivalent is, you went to the supermarket or something, and your wife turns up wearing her wedding dress.
Yeah,
you still can think, okay, well, I've seen it before, but not the same, not the right place or the right context
for that, dear. Like, I don't know, what are you doing? We're just here to get some greens. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to pick something else up, babe? I mean, by all means.
And it's not even a subtle change, right? It's not even a change that occurs gradually and slowly. And of course, the story is not over many, many weeks, but a sudden change. You know, the two people that have interacted with this dude that has come on, one of them's ended up dead, and the other one's ended up crazy within like hours of each other.
And because of that, like, and the other one was kind of crazy too, right? Like, the reason that she's fully gone and that it's fully the control of the Rock is because it kind of mirrors what the other girl did, right? She's sex crazed, she's super jealous. Like, this is similar to what the other woman showed. And once again, here we are. Troy's an empty vessel. So no, I don't think that they meant for this to be her aging and aging into the Betazoid thing. They didn't put that much thought into it.
See, you think they had forgotten that?
I mean, I don't know if they forgot it, but I definitely don't think it was on their minds when they wrote the script. Like, that's not what they were trying to get her to do. Or else they would have let the other lady be what she was and not have to mirror this sex-crazed jealousy thing. They would say, you know, Troy can age this way and the other lady can age differently because Troy has that Betazoid sex drive that's going to happen and kick in like her mom. But they didn't say that. They said, oh, we have to have these two characters act in very similar ways so that the audience, who's dumb, you know, thinks that it's because of this Rock thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I would have preferred that the Rock wasn't involved in the sense that it was, you know, almost like a placebo thing or something that wasn't really kind of active. I always would have preferred the story to be that there's some sort of telepathic connection there. But it does seem like more and more it's going over to the Rock. And what? Do we at least confiscate his rock at the end of this? At least threaten not to give it back to him?
Because nobody knows about it.
I suppose so.
Except for Troy. I don't know if it's the Rock or if it's the telepathic thing, but I just assumed that it was the Rock because the Rock was like the conduit to like zap her with the whatever. So my assumption, I guess, was that the lady, like, he has whatever that is of his life force in the Rock, or his bad whatever juju, bad mind thoughts, or his jealousy, everything else. I think that's kind of what they hint at, right? Is in that Rock, and then it goes to the person, and then when the person dies, it goes back to the Rock. Like, that's, I kind of put that together in my own head, even though they never explained it. That just seems to be what had happened. So I don't know. I could be completely off base. They don't really explain it, so who really gives a crap? It's just a stupid, like, trick of the episode to get you to say, hey, let me think about, oh, nothing. You want me to think about nothing. Oh, thanks, Star Trek. It was fun. It was beautiful. It was nice to look at. Let's put the mute button on next time I watch it.
And this story as well, this kind of like slight undercurrent that I don't think really gets discussed that much about it being like, you know, the negative side. I mean, we saw that only a few episodes ago or maybe half a season ago in Power Play. They effectively had that concept as well, right? Where you siphoned, you know, the undesirables or the undesirable features. And then also this is what's his name? The dude from Skin of Evil. Armus?
Armus?
the sludge monster. I mean, anyway, is that what Troy's going to become if she hangs around for a couple more weeks? She'll turn into sludge monster and get very angry.
Well, I mean, right now she's just exhibiting these sexual traits and this thing. I assume that she'll just die like the old lady, but I like the joke that you made. Will she become evil?
And by the way, the way that they try to get out of the oh no, we can't leave the other like this, she might die. I've got a way out of that one. I mean, that's not good. What kind of doctor are you going to there? He said, "So, doctor, I'm really worried. I'm worried that I might, you know, might die of thirst." Well, don't worry. Bang,
dead. I
mean, that's not a solution.
You didn't die of thirst, as it turns out. And how do they know for sure that they can de-age her at all? What are we even doing here?
Yeah, because she does just almost instantly, but. Anyway, that's ahead. So after she's done filling herself up, she goes to Alcar's course and tries to flirt with him.
Okay, okay. Sorry.
Filling herself up.
Feeling.
We already discussed it. I'll do it again. Anyway, so she goes to him, but oddly enough, he turns her down. So she just stomps on out of there. But don't worry, she'll find somebody. Pretty handsome there, crewman there, that decides to go home with her. Like a little lost puppy. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. Deanna Troi at this point, I'm going to go ahead and put it out there, is one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. And she has aged exceptionally well. Great genetics. She's a beautiful woman. And they're obviously using this to make some, like, titillation. And I can't say that if I was little young ensign at the moment, like, I would have been able to say, nah, dog. She's my superior officer. Like, I've probably fought off thoughts in our counseling sessions of that sort and said, you know what, I can't do that. She's my counselor, professional, professional, professional. So then when she finally comes to me and says this thing, like, okay, like, I don't have any other attachments, by all means. You know what I mean? It's the 24th century. We live free and die hard.
Sure, why not? Instead, she just says, come on home with me. And he says, absolutely, ma'am. Okay. But Riker decides to visit her, you know, for those crew evaluations. And she's wearing the, oh my God, I just can't explain it enough, but holy crap.
Now, my computer cut out right when Doc was about to explain his situation with the Blu-rays and the not Blu-rays.
Oh, I missed, you missed it?
I missed that point that you made there, Doc.
Oh, I'm just saying that I'm now having to watch this on Netflix on my phone, and I don't have I clearly don't have a high resolution, high a resolution as your Blu-ray.
The Blu-ray on the 50-inch TV. So this episode's really nice to watch. It's like a beautiful visual episode, terrible story, angering story, gross story. But if they had created a good story around this, it would have been a fantastic scene here. So that's where I stand.
Okay, so this is Deanna. And the problem is, it's a little hot white for some reason. But
I really hope you cut this whole part out of the episode right here. This part from the time you said, here's Deanna. Stop it. Stop it.
James was saying that there are no Blu-rays of this yet, and I thought,
there are Blu-rays. I just haven't bought them yet. I never got around to getting season 6 onwards. I don't even have a Blu-ray player anymore.
All right, because I'm looking at Orange Underwear through this, oh my God, nightie of hers.
Yeah, the nightie is definitely super see-through in HD.
Yes. And it's a very cold climate in her quarters.
Yeah, it makes it. The surrounding parts of it make it really gross, though, so I kind of hate even taking the visual enjoyment of it.
Right.
Yeah, because so it's just kind of a gross episode. And she's not, so. Yeah.
Right, she is. There's something really wrong with her, but yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, we have crew evaluations when all of a sudden here comes this ensign.
I always assumed this was the following morning.
It is, yeah.
So it's the following morning. So Riker kind of wanders in. So Riker's got a smirk on his face as he believes that he's woken up Troi, and Troi's still in there 90. He should have been more professional and said, by all means, please get changed.
I'll come back
in a minute. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
And instead, he goes straight in. He doesn't even need to be invited.
He's the Imzadi.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's not looking at her in her eyes right at this moment. Oh, he's taking it, drinking in all the ambiance of her. So, it's not until the crewman or the ensign comes out carrying his boots that Riker goes, oh, crap, what the hell?
Yeah, but that's gross because... like, she and Riker obviously aren't in a relationship, but he gets on this whole, like, whoa, like, he's upset. Like, he has no right to be that way. Like, she...
Maybe she does. If this guy is like a patient of hers in any way, or she,
I guess that's fair. But I don't think that's how what Riker does reads.
Oh, of course not. No, you know, as you were. Okay. Yes, sir.
If that was how it was supposed to be, yeah. If that was how it was supposed to be, he would say that. Well, this is wholly inappropriate, which is not what he says. He gets jealously upset, which I think kind of makes it. Again, it's just gross. Like, I don't like it. They're not in any kind of relationship. He walks in. He finds her in relation with him. Like, they're on a ship in the middle of space. He knows how it is. Every stinking world they stop at, he grabs himself a woman and makes sweet love to her, right? Like, or sometimes a man, and, like, that's his prerogative. So why here is he so angry? I don't get it. Like, I just, it makes me uncomfortable that he's so uncomfortable with her sexuality. And I'm already feeling weird about her sexuality because she's grossly not herself. This episode sucks, and it makes me feel bad.
Yeah, it does. It does. And he just wants to talk about the Curly evaluation, so you're mad. Oh, don't tell me. I know you better. You're angry. You know, finally he just blows up. Look, I'm done with this. You want to talk about Curly evaluations? Come see me when you've straightened out. And he leaves. Good for him. So,
but not good for him. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, he should be trying to do more. You're right, because this is just too strange, too fast. But he doesn't. He just walks out and leaves. So, anyway.
Because he's grossly jealous. If he wasn't grossly jealous, he would say, Deanna, this isn't really like you. You don't take on random ensigns that could potentially be in your care at some point. Like, as a counselor, you know, you save this for, like, the random diplomats that come through, like, and whoever else we have on board that's not going to be under your care in any way. Like, those are things that would make this episode quite a bit better. And it would play at that whole point of where does care end when you're harming other people, right? So Doc and I already mentioned it earlier. Like, that should be the clear motif of this episode. Care versus price, or care versus cost, right? But they don't do that at all narratively, and they ruin the whole episode and make it gross, and make every character gross in the meantime. Why are you so crappy, Star Trek?
Yeah, what's your problem, man? Okay, so now we have Deanna helping this young ensign who seems to be having a problem with her boss. You know, he just doesn't like me. I do my best. It's just not good enough. Really, give me an example. Well, I give him a report. He doesn't like it. He thinks it should be better. I mean, I just don't know what I'm doing wrong. Oh, well, maybe it's because you're a whiny little bitch right now. Maybe grow a pair. Do your job. And maybe if you could quit being a spineless weasel... He might like you.
This is
what do you think?
This is the one scene that I would say you should take your mute off for. Because out of context, it's like really hilarious.
Yeah, I enjoyed this despite the fact I probably shouldn't. I actually thought this was quite nice.
I shouldn't like that. That poor girl.
Oh, yeah. I mean... That's why I like it, though. Is like... This poor girl just caught in this scene. Like, she doesn't know what's going on. She has no clue. She's been down in the engine room, like, fixing the warp drive for a month. And then she comes out and she's like, I just can't do anything right for Geordi. He's such an asshole. And then she's like,
not Geordi. Another guy, but still.
I assume that it all goes back to Geordi because he's such an a-hole.
Oh, no. It was Lieutenant Dickhead or something. I don't know.
I know. I remember. But it's always Geordi.
That is true, Lieutenant. Anyway, the point is, you know, this poor girl, for all we know, her superior officer is just an ass. And she's trying her best. She's doing her best. She doesn't know what she's doing wrong because he can't be specific. It's just always not good enough for him. And obviously, Deanna would have said, okay, well, let's try and find the heart of the subject. Let's find out what's going on. Let's discuss it with him. Maybe we can talk to him. Oh, no, she just pulls this whole thing out. You know, well, Quit being a spineless little weasel and do your job, okay? Or be prepared to leave our ship because, you know, that's the way that is.
We're the flagship.
Is there anything else I could do for you? You know, it's like customer service. Yeah, hey, this is broken. Oh, that's too bad. Well, oh well. Is there anything else I could do for you? That's the way she came across. And who knows? We don't really ever see her counseling sessions except for once or twice, so maybe this is the way she normally is. Who knows?
Is this Janeway right here?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, the young ensign is Janeway.
Yeah, I thought I remembered her saying Janeway. So, you gotta wonder, is that why the Voyager doesn't have a ship's counselor? Is this the canon reason why Voyager doesn't have a ship's counselor?
Well, it's not. It's a different Janeway.
Yeah, no, but also, wasn't the counselor killed in Caretaker?
Yeah, well, I maybe. It was Snotty. I don't know.
Did they have Snotty. A counselor? I'm not sure if they had a counselor.
Yeah,
Snotty, I believe her name was.
Yeah, but Janeway already didn't want that position. She only had it because it was Starfleet, right? And then she has this story from her little sister, and so she's hanging on to some bad vibes. So when he dies, she's like, I'm not replacing the freaking counselor. F the counselor. Yeah.
So Chris, I didn't mean that the counselor died in the accident as they got sucked over to the Delta Quadrant. I meant that Janeway killed her.
Ah, that could be. Yeah, nice. She was the one that was in the shuttle with the Lieutenant Paris as he was flying at women at warp speed. Do you always fly at women at warp speed? Only when they're in visual range.
And she was a Beta Zed. Look at
yes.
that. Like, Jane was yes. like, all right, if you're going to get me one, get me a Beta Zed. And then she knew when she got out of Starfleet range, she was going to murder that. Anyway, sorry.
Either that or she was going to treat her crap. Hey, Captain, none of this crew takes my advice. They don't do anything that I ask them to. Oh. Well, maybe it's because you're a whiny little bitch. Get over it, or we'll deposit you on the next M-class planet and just take off. But she died.
Dude, the Beta Z counselor was going to get the Shut Up Wesley treatment every time she yes. tried to tell us how the emotions of the planet were coming through.
Yes, I'm tired of you people, you Beta Z bitches, telling people what they need to be doing. It all started with my little sister having to deal with one of you twits. So, I don't know.
Dude, have you considered a career in human resources?
Absolutely.
Yes, you're really good at portmanteaus already.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, hey, maybe it's because I was affected by this rock.
That magically can let you go back to your regular age when you've aged like 60. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, all you have to do is die, and then the Katra is all of a sudden removed.
Did the other old lady go back to her young self?
No, she was dead.
This makes no sense! Doesn't even follow the rules that it sets up for itself!
I think it's because she was dead, but Dr. Crusher didn't think about, you know, putting her into stasis and...
No.
Waiting Luke. Until she finally came back.
Easiest,
yeah, right. Why
fix, easiest fix of all time. She dies. They wheel her in. She's still old. She slowly de-ages, right? They say, we need to do an autopsy. He says, no autopsy. They got her in whatever the morgue is, right? They decide they're going to take her out and do the autopsy anyway. When they pull her out, one scene, they pull her out, she's young. They're like, what the? Where'd the old woman go?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's all it takes. And then you've solved this whole problem of why did Deanna de-age? Well, you don't have to explain it all. You don't have to put any words to it. You literally just have them roll her out and she's suddenly young. Done.
And maybe after she was young and re-aged, when they walked up to her box, they could have heard, help me.
No, I think that's a bridge too far. They have to like... bring Deanna, resuscitate Deanna back to life. I think it has to make the point of that they're trying to make, that there's a cost to this thing that he's doing. But then they do a thing that's like magic with no purpose, like magic with no reason. I'm cool with magic. I'm cool with flying through space and bending space and time. But like, give me a reason and then follow it consistently.
Right. Right. Okay, so Deanna shows up in 10 forward with enough gray hair that it looks like she's aged 10 years overnight. Her face, too, just starts losing it all. She goes a little off kilt, and Riker steps in to get her out of there. He takes her home, and of course she hits on him. She can't believe he's cheating on the young crewman, but then she scrapes his neck and walks away. Which has him running away, running to sick bay. Hey, don't tell anybody that this happened, but can you fix this for me? But anyway, which she does, I think. Hello? I lost my boys.
No. We're still here. It's just that I don't think this adds much. I mean, again, it kind of flags up the fact that, hey, look, Riker does know something's up, but he's not going to do anything about it. And they're not going to take matters into their own hands. And again, it's but minutes away from, you know, Troy going completely crazy and trying to stab Picard with a knife. But no, we won't get suspicious about the guy, and he'll just go down to do his things. It's all good.
Yeah.
Everybody looks stupid. Everybody.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, talking about people looking stupid, they have the scene in the ready room where the dude meets his two staff members, mm-hmm. and they basically do a bit of a bit of a chat exposition, and then they basically say that, is there a ceasefire? No, there's not a ceasefire. Oh, too bad these two people want to fight each other. Yes, very bad. Maybe we should ask them to meet somewhere neutral. Well, where? And he comes up, and they mention the city that they're supposed to meet at, and the two staff members who I would have thought have read up about this, if they're going to go down and be professional, it was almost a news to them that this place even existed, and Picard knows it. And again, it just seems like everyone's just being stupid in this episode.
Oh yeah, sounds like it. So anyway, the ambassador is in the transporter room when a super-aged Deanna comes in with a knife and tries to kill the woman she thinks is having an affair with Alcar. So she's now become the goofy mama and is about ready to kill somebody. But she ends up stabbing Picard in the process, as you mentioned. And as it turns out, her neural transmitter levels are like the mother's, and Beverly wants an autopsy now. Fine.
But first needs to kill Troy in order to get the autopsy. So when you said that she wanted an autopsy now, it sounded like she wanted Troy's autopsy.
Oh, no, not yet. Nope, she wants the mother's. So go ahead, why not?
I mean, there's a huge amount of evidence now that something is up, right? That whoever's connected to this man, he's clearly causing harm. And I still don't think we shift into gear. I still feel that Picard's almost dragging his feet, and there's still, you know, questions here. So you're required to think, well, why aren't the crew kind of moving as fast as they need to move? You know, I think in the good episodes, the crew should really be ahead of you, but only just ahead of you, that so that when they do something, you clearly see that they're being clever, and you could have thought you might have been able to be in their position had you been a bit more focused or something. But here, the crew are way behind the viewer, and you're almost kind of thinking, come on, people, come on. You know, clearly something's up, and there's no reason for them to be withholding, you know, the story, holding the story back so that the guy can get off the ship and he can go down to the planet. And then he can say, yeah, I'm now on the planet. You can't come and get me. I admit that I torture people, or at least I pour bad things into their souls. It just all seems so, it's a convoluted storyline that leads the crew looking stupid. And I don't think there's even any payoff from it, because I don't think we take away anything from this story other than, that wasn't a particularly great story.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's pretty much all our takeaway is. So anyway, she does the autopsy, but she doesn't really get much of an answer. She just finds out that Alcar's mother is the body of a 30-year-old, and has no DNA that even makes her his mother to begin with. So Picard confronts Alcar about it. Wait, you did a what? An autopsy? But I told you. Too bad. So sad. But then he finally admits that he's planning to keep Deanna to himself, to keep him centered, to keep him from thinking bad thoughts. It's amazing. First, Sarek needed somebody to keep his bad thoughts for him. Now this guy's the same thing. How does that work? I mean, why doesn't James just give me all his bad thoughts?
Oh, I'm sending bad thoughts over. Unfortunately, they don't even try a kind of like a pseudo scientific explanation here. I don't know. There's nothing really of interest as they kind of unfold this part, and they kind of like use a loose justification that, you know, if this guy's able to put his burdens upon other people, then he can be great, and it's a sacrifice you have to make. And then the question is about, well, you know, what gives you the right to choose? You know, who gets affected by this? What gives you the right to choose that you're going to do a bit of harm to this person in order to be able to do good to others? You know, they skate dangerously around it, avoiding any kind of decent analogies in any way possible. I think it's very unfortunate.
Another thing. Why does Alcar need a cute little 30-year-old female? I mean, why couldn't he have done this with Worf? Or even Data.
Which speaks to another kind of gross element that we're playing into this concept that women are more
weak
or easily fooled or pulled into these types of situations, which is...
interesting.
It's gross. Yeah,
why? It's they take so many bad paths in this episode. I think had they just found a way to do something else or get Scotty on board on time, they could have redone this, because there's a lot of... It's a stereotypical nightmare here, and it's bad. So Picard comes up with the solution. We need to let Deanna die.
And so that way, was it Picard or was it Crusher? I thought it was Crusher that came up with this.
No, Picard. I think Picard did. His solution to letting her die, and then when she starts to turn to this other woman, that's when they beam her out in time.
Okay, so this is stupid for a huge number of reasons. One, you're killing your patient. Bad idea. Two, even
once they're gonna revive her.
But, you know, killing someone's never a good idea, even if you intend with the best will in the world to revive them later. That can never be a good idea. So first of all, stupid idea on Picard to kill Troy. Then they kind of hang around to wait for the guy to attack the woman. And it's like, oh, yeah, we could beam her up or we could beam down now. But, yeah, let's give him a bit more time to make his move. Again, it's like, what? Really? Why?
Did you get the impression he cared about that woman?
No, not at all. And I got the impression that he didn't even consider that the safety of that woman would be something that he should be expected to care about.
Yeah.
So it's he might knock over the chair. He might spill a bit of water on the table. Whatever. Would rather he didn't. But, you know, if he does, it's fine.
Right. It just... They had no way of knowing when those rocks were going to touch. So,
and so
he used her.
What did we need here? We needed the woman. So we needed the connection between Troy and the man to be severed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Heading in one direction at warp 9 for 15 minutes isn't going to do that. They're going to have it over subspace, really? Are they? That's going to work?
What if the connection would have killed her because it was no longer there?
Well, it wouldn't have been any worse than what happened.
Well, I think the point would have been to try and get Deanna back as she was, but that was, you know, she was going to die one way or another, so I guess make him think she was dead. But he says, you know, he'll just go right back to her. Or Crusher said that. He'll just go right back to her. As soon as she comes back to life, we'll go back to her. Well, we need to make him think that she's done. And just at the time that his rock lights up, that means he's his bad feelings are all in that rock at that moment. And then when they touch, poof, there they go. But they didn't touch. So it stayed in the rock.
So his rock lighting up sounds like such a euphemism. It really does. It
definitely.
Yeah, it does. we've been so using rocks as euphemisms the whole episode.
Yeah, you haven't heard it? All right, so it all worked out. The lady's beamed out, and Arlkar is forced to deal with the demons inside him, and he dies over them. As Mr. Worf. And it looks like I said, why didn't Worf do it? Well, it looks like he was trying to bond with Worf, because he's heading for him. Come here, young boy. let me touch you. But he just kind of steps back, and he goes down. So, did I miss anything?
No, I think you got every GD moment of this stupid-ass episode. Yeah. In word form. At least as many as I want.
Get it going. Doc's probably already in REM sleep right now.
I think it's really unfortunate that it's episodes like this that I think give the Troy character a bad name. Now,
yes.
I think that since TNG's been off the air, and as people have kind of digested, and they've also... And probably also because they've seen where DS9 went and Voyager went and stuff. I kind of get the impression that the hatred for the Troy character and also for the Wesley character, right, has subsided somewhat. You know, I mean, maybe also the fact that they, you know, that they had Harry Kim and Neelix meant that we were a lot more forgiving of Troy.
I love Neelix. Neelix is one of my favorite characters of all time, Doc. So just for the record,
okay.
Whenever we get to Voyager, go ahead.
But we were in a situation where I remember a situation when I was younger that people didn't like Troy and they wouldn't like Troy episodes and they would think that it's all stupid. And then when you're 6 years into the character's arc and you're pumping this stuff out, there's, you know, you can't really blame them, right? This is just stupid.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have if you were to replace, right? So nothing really in this episode relies on Troy being empathic or having her mum or having any history at all. If you were to replace Troy with LaForge or with Data or with Riker, you wouldn't have treated those characters in the way that you've treated Troy, yep. Which just means you're burning the Troy character, and it's rather unfortunate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then I think it's time to let Doc go to bed.
Yes.
So it's time to give our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5. With 1 being more likely, 5 being highly doubtful. Chris, how about you? Let's start with you.
Oh, so what can I say that has not been said? On mute, this episode, by all means, is like a 4.5. But I don't give half stars, so that means I would put it at a 5. With the sound on, however, this episode is gross. It's disgusting. It makes me sick to my stomach. It makes me feel bad. And I don't want my Star Trek to make me feel bad. And I love the character of Troy when she is done well and when she is treated fairly and rightly. And I don't feel like this episode does any of that. I think that the actress that plays Deanna Troi is a wonderful woman, and that she has done a lot through the Star Trek fandom to touch people and affect people, and she's a wonderful person to fans and to her people. So I hate that this is the type of episode that is called a Troy episode, and I wish like hell that we could get beyond Troy as a sex symbol and actually see Troy as a competent member of the crew, which is what I feel like we did in Voyager with 7. Unfortunately, we never quite get fully there in Next Gen. So I have to give this a 1 because it grosses me out and makes me feel bad. But I did not give the other one a 1. I'll stand by that till my dying day.
Hmm. Okay. I'll find it. Anyway. Yeah, so let's end this episode on a positive note, like I said. Me, I don't like this one either. No, it's a stupid plot line. It was put together too quickly. There's nothing. Rakarg, Saronia, whoever they were, we don't know who they were. We don't know what they look like. I would have liked to have seen a few war shots of them in battle, maybe. But we don't. All we see is this dribble coming from Alcar and Deanna. The acting's just sloppy. Some of Marina Sirtis's performance, I don't know. I definitely think she could have done better had she been given a better script and more time to work on this little one. But it was just too... It was rushed together. So I'm with you. I'm out on 1 as well. Because I can't give less than a 1. I've had a couple episodes that I said, you know, I would give it a 0.5 if I could.
Code of Honor.
System, yeah. Yes. But our system does say 1 to 5. So I have to stick with the lowest being a 1. And this is a 1 for sure. So, Imaginary Friend, The Perfect Mate, a couple other ones, New Ground. So, anyway, how about you, James?
So, you know, Imaginary Friend, New Ground, Perfect Mate, they all sound good at this point in time. Yeah, I mean, it's a 1 out of 5 for me. It's a thumbs down kind of episode. I think that the issue that we kind of stumbled across here in terms of the kind of the damage it does to the Troy character and how it builds up a reputation that Troy episodes are just bad, I think this episode kind of harms more widely across the series than something like New Ground does, right? I mean, maybe New Ground harms it as an Alexander episode, I don't know, but or Imaginary Friend. What's Imaginary Friend? Who was really the lead in that?
It was the little girl.
Yeah, but you can't really say it was carried by the little girl. Was that also really a Troy episode because she was so involved with the counseling? I don't know, maybe. But yeah, no. I mean, I've spoken enough, right, today. Not in love with this one. It's odd that we get to this stage in the series and something like this gets put out. I did not know that there were kind of production issues that meant that, you know, they had to film off a draft script that was written in 45 minutes or whatever. I'm sure that's an exaggeration. Yeah. But yeah, it's just lacking, and it's not a, you know, it's nowhere near the best. It's nowhere near what they were putting out week in, week out, you know, for season 4, season 5, as even the bad episodes were actually, you know, decent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But Scotty's right, here then. Next week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is.
Oh, Jimmy Doohan.
Yes, the late and great. So, anyway. All right. Well, then, thanks for coming on, Chris.
My pleasure.
I guessed them all right at ones.
It's tough. Really tough.
Yeah, it was a tough one. I wasn't sure what you were going to do. So, Chris, I've got you on for Rascals.
Yes.
In about 3 months.
I'll go ahead and start conversating with Melissa. I have a lot of things to talk to her about anyway. And, yeah.
In an uncharted corner of the galaxy, a legend has been trapped in time for 75 years. Haunted by the past, he yearns for another call to action. But the future holds no place for him.
As one engineer to another, I can do this.
Can he become a hero one last time?
It's coming apart, lad!
Scotty returns next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
So everyone, join us next week. Did I say next week? Just join us next time as we review episode 4 of season 6, and that's going to be Relics. And at this time, knock on desk, we have two people that requested it, so that would be our usual max. Paul Finch and Kenan McDuff. So we get Kenan
McDuff!
We get to talk about his forum post. That'll be fun. So everyone, take care. And Chris, stay on standby. You never know what can happen.
Yes, sir.
Take care and good night, guys.
Good night.
Say good night, James. There you go. Now your turn, Chris.
Good night, James.
Good night, Chris.
Press the button. Press the button. Moving
press
on.
The button. He wants to go to sleep.
Who's pressing the button?
Okay. I'll press the button.
No, no, I mean, I've stopped the recording.
Oh, good.
Are you that tired, Doc?